Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the City Council Chambers. We're going to begin in a minute, but a few introductory announcements. If you are here to testify, be sure and sign up on one of the sheets out front that does not include the special presentation for PADA, so if you're okay. If you have signed up, you'll be called up in the order that you wrote your name down. Folks are called up in groups of four. Testimony is 3 minutes or less. There's a clock in front of or behind the microphones there on that big piece of wood that will count you down from 3 minutes. Here you just need to give us your first and last name. We do not want your address. We do not want your phone number. We do not want your email address except for Chair Kogan.
And his home phone number.
And his home phone number. And if you, by local law, if you're a lobbyist representing an organization, you need to tell us that as well after you give us your name. So we're really glad that you're here. And we're going to start, I'm going to start by recognizing Commissioner Nick Fish.
Are we going to do the count? Oh, before. Okay. Thank you, Mayor. It's my honor today to partner with the mayor on a very important celebration, and I'd like to invite Elizabeth Leach, Charles Froelich, and Bob Cox to come forward to the dais while I set this up. And I'm going to ask you at the end to acknowledge and identify the other gallery owners that are here, just so we can also celebrate there with them. I have a proclamation which the mayor is issuing today to read, and then we'll turn it over to you, Charles, for some comments. Whereas October 2011 marks the 25th anniversary of Portland's First Thursday Art Walk and the 300th First Thursday hosted by the Portland Art Dealers Association and the city's many galleries, 300. And whereas First Thursday has contributed to Portland's national and international reputation as a thriving arts community, and whereas First Thursday and PADA offer art education to thousands of students of all ages from throughout the Pacific Northwest annually, and whereas the exciting and welcoming setting of First Thursday offers both new and experienced art lovers and collectors a chance to participate in Portland's vibrant art scene, and whereas the Pearl District, one of Portland's most dynamic neighborhoods, benefits from the creative and economic contributions of First Thursday, and whereas exposure to visual arts enriches and expands understanding of our world, our neighbors, our cities, and ourselves, now therefore I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim October 5, 2011 to be First Thursday Art Walk Appreciation Day in Portland and encourage Portlanders to celebrate by taking part. Congratulations. Charles Froelich, we have an original proclamation signed by the mayor, which we'll hand you in a second, but why don't you start?
Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Commissioners Fritz, Leonard, Saltzman, Sam Adams. First, I want to say a thank you to Sam. In the winter of 2009, he gathered arts leaders, and he knew the hard times had started hitting. And he with his team, Jennifer Yoakum especially, encouraged and really required creative collaboration. And it made all of us think differently about how the public and private and all of the nonprofit sectors work together. The Portland Art Dealers Association evolved to then include nonprofit, museum, and academic galleries in its flyer, so you'll see us expanding east and west side of the river, and that was a wonderful encouragement from Sam. It was lending a hand and an ear to get us through the hard time. We started 25 years ago at the idea of Bob Cox and William Jameson, who you might remember, and it would not have been possible had not all the galleries signed on. The First Thursday effect is tens of thousands of people every First Thursday wandering the streets, but it's not just the galleries that benefit. You might ask the restaurants. It's usually their strongest night of the month. There are other ancillary businesses, the art shippers, there are the printers, the mailing houses, the travel industry, the hotels. So Travel Portland and Portland Art Dealers Association are close partners, and they sense what impact we have. I want to ask if you get out for First Thursday. Nick, I know you do. Sam, I know you do. Commissioners, please join us sometime. It's every first Thursday of every month. So even tonight, we have First Wednesday. That's our little inside thing. You can come and have a glass of wine, kind of, if you show your ID. Tomorrow night is First Thursday. It's the 25th year. We do it every month. It's always changing shows. We bring artists from all around the world and all around the region. And we really hope you'll join us. And thank you very much.
I will be at the Lee Kelly exhibit this evening.
Fantastic.
Charles, thank you for all you've done and do. And your gallery is at the DeSoto building for people that want to visit. And Elizabeth Leach, why don't you take up?
I want to thank Mayor Adams and the commissioners for recognizing the work that the First Thursday galleries have done for 25 years. In 1986, there were six of us. Now there's 12 of us that publish this publication along with the nonprofit organizations, the museum and everybody. And so it's a really great vehicle. We're basically the ambassadors for Portland. This magazine goes all over the country. It's why Brian Ferrizzo decided to take a job at the Portland Art Museum. He thought we were a thriving cultural community, which we are, but we all still need to continue to support each other. It's often the first place that people come when they come to our city is the galleries, and we can be, again, the ambassadors, the portals for our city and steer them to restaurants and other businesses. And again, we represent the city when we travel and we do art fairs. So it's exciting to be part of this community. I think First Thursday and First Wednesday work better than any city in the country, actually, because it is a community strengthening both on the east side and the west side, and it helps, as Charles mentioned, all the businesses like the restaurants in the area. So thank you for recognizing our efforts on behalf of the community.
And Bob, you know, before we introduce Bob Cox, the name William Jameson was invoked, and of course, for those, some know that name because of his work as a gallery owner, and others know that name because it's one of our newest and best parks in the city of Portland, in the heart of the Pearl District. Welcome.
Thank you. You know, when we first started this event a number of years ago, we were six very small businesses, which made a very, very small economic impact on the city of Portland. And through a great degree of perseverance, it's come to represent and change the social impact on the city as well as the cultural impact on the city. It's a testament to the perseverance of the dealers that almost everybody who began this 25 years ago is still involved with this event, aside from the two that we've lost, which are William Jameson and Laura Rousseau. But even people who work for William are still involved in the event, and people who work for Laura are still involved in the event. That gallery still continues to go on. It has become an a priori educational tool for a lot of the underfunded art programs around the city in the three county area. On any given First Thursday, teachers will pull up in buses with their students and conduct classes within the galleries. It should also be noted that a lot of people have met their spouses at First Thursday gatherings. Some people have proposed to their spouses at First Thursday gatherings, and other people have gotten married in the same gallery that they've met in. When we first set this up, it was simply to try to promote the welfare of these very small businesses. None of us had any idea that it would develop into the kind of event that it has, and it would impact the city in the way that it has.
Well, congratulations. Mayor, can we get a picture with the dealers that are present
absolutely.
Today? And with Jane Beebe and the other dealers are here, would you come forward and we'll get a group picture?
Where your heart tied?
I did.
Good. So have all the dealers in the middle. Hi, how are you?
I don't
have an
extra
bottle. Hi. Oh, there you go. Sam, can we
Could we start at the end and just have everybody introduce themselves and their gallery?
Tricia Hassler, Waterstone Gallery.
Carolyn Brothers, Butters Gallery.
Dean Beebe, PDX Contemporary Art.
Charles Froelich, Froelich Gallery.
Charles Hartman, Charles Hartman Fine Arts.
Bob Cox, Aldrin Gallery.
Cecily Quintana, Quintana Galleries.
Elizabeth Leach, Elizabeth Leach Gallery.
Janet Carrington, Blackfish Gallery.
Martha Lee, Laura Russo Gallery.
King Rathman, Waterstone Gallery.
What a round of applause for this.
Smile.
Oh, one more. I was a smile.
Got it.
Thank you all.
Thank you all.
Thanks for coming.
That was great.
Thanks for
all your work for the city, for all your work. Thanks for your work.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Well, it's my desk chair, but my back has been killing me, so I decided I'd try something different.
Yeah. All right. Today is Wednesday, October 5th, 2011. It's 9:30 a.m., and the City Council will come to formal order. Good morning, Carla. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine.
All right, are you raking leaves yet?
No.
Soon?
Don't stack up.
Very
Short
soon.
Subject here.
Yeah. Can you please call the roll?
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Aye. Here.
Seltzman?
Here.
Adams?
I already have leaves falling. I'm already raking leaves, just for the record. Here. Quorum is present. We shall begin, beginning with communications. Can you please read the title for 1039?
Request of Michael Krupp to address council regarding the basis of any commissioners remaining in the seats they hold.
Welcome back, Mr. Krupp.
Thank you for this opportunity to address you and the world. That you abuse the power we have given you, conduct shady business deals behind closed doors, and basically ensure a downward economic spiral that will result in our mutual lack is unremarkable, in that you do so with such graceful arrogance while clearly lining your pockets, you poison the city, my wife, as you may recall. When I requested an audit of Mr. Leonard's personal finances last year, first I told him we'll both feel better afterwards. I was at least half correct. I definitely do feel better. And in his sudden, unexplained departure from politics entirely, he has created a whirlpool big enough to sink the SS Sam Adams and the SS Michael Schrunk. If this were an episode of LA Law, the chief detective would say, "That's as good as a confession," to which the DA would respond, "Bring me the evidence." As mayor, I will enthusiastically assist in this effort. With this unheralded mass migration of political parasites, there is for the first time ever in a city of this size and influence a break in the political chain of succession. There's no one in the batter's box for mayor, and a contest of squabbling millionaire politicos at the city club only serves to further contrast truth from falsehood, the old world from the new. Therefore, I will walk through the front door of City Hall obligated to and obliged by none. The first American Revolution was valiant but incomplete. The spores of empire not fully eradicated, strengthening like pneumonia, not fully cured by antibiotic. We have been almost completely unhinged from the dream for a new way, a new world, no longer even remotely protected by our Constitution. The disease of corporate government has spread to the highest institutions and fuels the lust for power through war and conquest. We suffer from starvation by corporation while the bankers once again gnaw on our bones. This country is not a vaguely defined corporate asset. My water will not be sold down the river. Our trees and crops are not biofuels. The air is not an aerial dump site. We will not tolerate nuclear power generators located on fault lines, coastlines, and near large drinking water bodies, placed like roach hotels under the sink and refrigerator. For similar purpose, it seems. I'm the 99% who comprise 100% of what is human. to love and help each other, and to promote and celebrate the children, our future. This is only possible through the highest respect for our mothers and her creations, and the creations of her creations ad infinitum. We hope, fear not, your way has not been completely usurped by matriarchal mammocracy. You merely suffer from patriarchal insecurity. Rejoice, the people of Portland, for it is from here that we, the people, all the people, will turn back the pigs of power, the worms of war, and the dogs of death and doom. Amen, sisters and brother. Down, Rover.
Thanks for your testimony. Charles Froelich
thank you very
already
much.
Gave his testimony, so we don't have to read that, do we? Okay. We will now consider the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have a 9:30 time certain. Can you please read the titles for 1041, 1042, 1043?
1041, declare October 2011 Domestic Violence Awareness Month in the City of Portland. 1042, accept the report on 1 year of operation of the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services. And 1043, authorize funding for 2 domestic violence crisis response advocates to work with the Portland Police Bureau on evenings and weekends.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. Today, the council designates October 2011 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And in so doing, we recommit ourselves to doing all we can to end the cycle of violence in our community. Domestic violence continues to be a pervasive problem in our city, accounting for approximately 5,000 calls for police services each year. Part of this council's commitment to stopping the cycle of violence has been the opening, a little over a year ago, of the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services. It opened in September of 2010. The Gateway Center creates an entryway to supportive services that was not available before the center opened. It makes it easier for victims to receive a variety of services under one roof, offers culturally appropriate services for traditionally underserved populations. The Gateway Center also brings together 19 different government and private partners together to cohesively serve victims and their children. And also, as you may recall, I think many of you were there for the opening, for the first time ever, victims are able to have restraining orders issued via remote technology so that they can go to the Gateway Center rather than downtown county courthouse and speak to a judge via two-way camera and receive restraining orders, temporary restraining orders, in a much easier, much more compassionate environment, we believe. The final item on the agenda is for the city to contribute a small portion of the funds necessary for a one-year pilot program with Multnomah County, which will partner domestic violence advocates with Portland police officers to provide crisis intervention services on evenings and weekends when services like the Gateway Center are not available. So after the Gateway presentation, if the council has questions about this last item, we have Captain Donna Henderson of the Portland Police Bureau and Annie Neal of the Multnomah County Domestic Violence Coordinators here to answer any questions on that last item. So to start off, the presentation on the Gateway Center's annual report is Multnomah County Chair Jeff Kogan. The Gateway Center is a joint project between the city and the county. He will be joined by Gateway Center Director Martha Strawn Morris, and also a survivor who has received services at the center. Interpretation will be provided by Karina Rutova, who is the Gateway Center program coordinator. Welcome, all of you. Chair Kogan.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Adams, members of council. I'm Jeff Kogan, chair of the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners. That's jeff.kogan@multco.us. And I'm really happy to be here joining you today to bring attention to the tragedy of domestic violence through the recognition of Domestic Violence Awareness Month as well as to celebrate the first year of operation at the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services and share some perspective on why it's been such an astonishing success. It's been said that good ideas are common, but what's uncommon are people who will work hard enough to bring them about. What we have at the Gateway Center is a good idea and a lot of people who've worked really hard to make it happen. This city-county collaboration that got the idea off the ground is a reflection of our shared commitment to find ways to effectively address the epidemic of domestic violence in our community. And it is worth noting that while crime generally has been decreasing, domestic violence is an exception to that, and the incidence of domestic violence has been increasing rapidly. And so a response, a coordinated response, was necessary. But as we know, in these challenging times where all of us are under fiscal pressure, increasingly we need to address problems through partnership. And this is the kind of partnership, I think, that speaks well of our ability collectively at the city and the county to work to address our challenges. But I will say, while partnership is the right way to go, the simple truth is partnership is very difficult, and particularly partnership to address a challenge like this. In order to make something like this, the Gateway Center, a success, what you need more than anything else is a champion. And I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge Commissioner Saltzman's leadership to that end. Commissioner Saltzman has really been the Pied Piper who has drawn together members of the community to create this really needed service. And without your leadership on this, Dan, this would not have happened. So thank you very much. But it also took a lot of people to come together. This is truly a broad community-based partnership. The sheriff, the courts, the police, the state of Oregon, the city of Portland, a range of nonprofit providers, and the community of survivors. The Gateway Center is governed by a very committed advisory council co-chaired by Commissioner Saltzman and myself. And I just want to take one moment to acknowledge the members. There's Chris Bilhart from Volunteers of America Home Free, Tana Sanchez from the Native American Youth and Family Center, Leslie Kay from Legal Aid, Donna Henderson for the Portland Police Bureau, Rod Underhill from the Multnomah County DA's office, Tricia Martin from the YWCA, Gloria Wiggins from Catholic Charities, Terry Doyle, a survivor of domestic violence, Carol Lehman from the Oregon DHS, Annie Neal, the county's DV coordinator, and Judge Maureen McKnight from the Circuit Court. Domestic violence touches all of our public safety and human service systems, and it makes sense that we would work together to help make sure our residents are safe. I'm really proud of the work that we've accomplished, and I think it's great to have something to celebrate. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to the executive director of the Gateway Center, Martha Strawn Morris. Before I turn it over, I'd like to acknowledge that this has been a tremendous accomplishment. It's been a startup. It's been something new. It's been something that required skills to work with a broad range of community members, and Martha has done a phenomenal job, and we're really lucky to have her. So thank you for your service, Martha.
Thank you, Chair Kogan. Mayor Adams, commissioners, I'm Martha Strawn Morris, the director of the Gateway Center, and I'm so pleased to have this opportunity to update you on what's been happening with the operations of the Gateway Center over the last year. I'm looking up for my PowerPoint to start. Oh, she's got it. I think a little over a year ago when we opened, we all wondered if it was going to be a success. And at this point, I think some really good questions to ask are people coming to the center? Where are they coming from? Are they a diverse population? Are we meeting an unmet need in the community? If the center is working, why is it working? And how do participants feel about their experience at the center? And before I share more, just a brief reminder about the sort of core components of the Gateway Center. Obviously, it's co-located a variety of services, all designed to assist victims, survivors of domestic violence, and their children. We work in a public building. It's a very homey physical environment. We have on-site childcare. And as Commissioner Saltzman mentioned, we are an additional access point for domestic violence restraining orders. So to the first question, are people coming to the Gateway Center? Yes, in droves. In the first year, we served more than 2,000 unduplicated survivors who made more than 4,500 service visits to the center. Another almost 1,000 support group visits were made to the center, and 1,400 visits to the childcare were made, which means all told, the Gateway Center staff handled almost 7,000 visits to the center. It's a huge number, especially for the first year. And I'm particularly proud that our relatively small administrative staff of three was able to build a operational infrastructure capable of managing that volume. So I'd really like to thank Karina Ratova, my program coordinator, who's here, and Diana Lee, our receptionist and admin assistant, who's working back at the fort right now, but I'm sure appreciate her service. This graph shows the quarterly visit rate over that first year, so you can see we're trending upward. This is a density map showing where the participants are coming from. As you can see, they're coming from all over Multnomah County. Every zip code is represented, some a little bit more than others, but they're reaching us from far and wide. And they're a very diverse population. I promised this body that I would do everything I could to make the Gateway Center welcoming to people from all walks. I think we've done a great job doing that. Participants indicate to us at very high rates that they find the Gateway Center welcoming for themselves and others from their cultural communities.
Can I just go back one slide?
Sure.
What is encompassed?
This one?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
The 5% other, what are some of the groups represented in that category?
African immigrant, and also some people identify as European, and then also some people identify as multiracial. All of those would be included in the other.
Thank you.
Sure. So I think a really good indicator that we're meeting an unmet community need is found in our referral sources. 50% of people learn about services at the Gateway Center from other service providers. So it's healthcare workers and social workers, just a wide variety of service providers. We're now gathering that information more specifically so we could see. We know people are coming straight from their doctor's offices in some cases, walking into the center. I think it indicates to domestic violence intervention takes time, and it takes a particular expertise, and the folks who come into contact with it need us to be there, and they're sending folks to us. 20% of our referrals come from family and friends, which is a good indicator that we have a good reputation amongst our citizenry for doing good, solid, and safe work. And now 20% of our referrals are coming directly from law enforcement. So 1 in 5 folks say that they heard about us from police or another member of law enforcement. The Gateway Center information is right on the victim complainant form that Portland Police Bureau has. This is the little form that's in every patrol car in Portland that they give to victims at crime scenes. And we actually see, I know it's a little hard to read there, but we actually see these forms physically come into the building quite often, with the Gateway Center sort of highlighted or circled, kind of like it is here. So I've talked about people who are coming. They're coming from all over the city. They're very diverse. I believe we're meeting an unmet community need. But I didn't want to leave today without telling you my best thinking on why I believe the center is working as well as it is. I think the center is working as well as it is because we've included and integrated 4 key components. We have navigator advocates as our front line of service. We have a great variety of services in the building. We have restraining orders, and we have childcare. And I think without any one of those, it would not be the same center that it is. And I'd like to take just a moment to briefly highlight each of those components. So the navigators are advocates, and every first-time participant who comes to the Gateway Center meets first with a navigator. Our participants come from such a variety of walks of life. They present with such a myriad of issues and circumstances and needs that unless we had a neutral and knowledgeable person to sit down with them first, I don't think we would be able to support them the same way. 30% of our participants, first-time participants to the center, indicate to us that they don't know what they want to do. They just want to explore their options. They don't have words to talk about what they want to do. And I think it's the navigators that help them think it through and decide on next steps. And then, of course, they connect with other services in the building. Our navigators actually come from 6 different community-based organizations. I would like to give my great thanks to these organizations. They've trained primary navigators and also backup navigators to ensure we have full staffing levels every day. They come from NEA, Ecumenical Ministries, Ross, from the Immigrant Refugee Community Organization, from Catholic Charities, El Programa Hispano, from the YWCA, and from Bradley Engel. Between them, they speak 8 languages. They're a great, diverse group. Karina has led them, and they're a great team now, even though they come from 6 different agencies. They, too, are back at the fort working away right now. I wish that they could be here to hear how strongly I feel, how important I think they are in the work that we do every day. So thank you to Wendy, Elvia, Fazia, Nakomi, Lee Young, and Fazia for doing such great work. They're very busy. They see sometimes 4 or 5 participants every day. These are very common sentiments that we hear about navigators. Things like, she put me at ease, she explained things clearly, she made me feel comfortable. But we also wouldn't work well if we didn't have such a great variety of services. These are all agencies that partner with on-site services in the building. They've done a great job jumping in and integrating and rubbing shoulders and getting all the best of the best out of co-located services. So big thanks to DHS, Volunteers of America, Home Free, Multnomah County Office of LASSO, LifeWorks Northwest, the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, DIVERT, Sexual Assault Resource Center, Portland Police Bureau's Domestic Violence Reduction Unit, the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, the Circuit Court, particularly the members of the Family Court Bench, and Abuse Recovery Ministry and Services, all who partner in our on-site services. Again, another thing we hear very, very frequently from participants, both in the written comments they make — these are all actual written quotes that people make on the checkout forms, but they tell us orally as well — it makes such a difference to have it all in one place. I didn't know what to do or where to turn, and this place helped with everything. Restraining orders are another key component, without which I don't think we would do as good work. Many people come seeking a restraining order and then connect with other supportive services in the building that they may not have known existed or may not have realized that they needed until they came. We did 557 restraining order applications in our first year. That's 24% of all of those filed in Multnomah County in the same period. 16% were interpreted. We believe that's a higher interpreted rate than restraining orders downtown too, which I think indicates some accessibility that we're creating for potentially underserved populations. Again, something we hear over and over: thank goodness I got help with my restraining order. The quote on the bottom, I think, says it really well. My navigator made me feel relaxed and safe, even when filling out a restraining order, which is stressful. Thank you. I just don't think we'd be the same place without the childcare either. We serve a lot of mothers. And for them to know that their children are well cared for and happy while they deal with sometimes extremely difficult emotional issues is tremendously important. I really appreciate the funding provided by the Portland Children's Levy to make this critical service possible.
Can I ask you a question about childcare?
Sure.
Does the program link to the family relief nurseries that are in town?
Volunteers of America's Relief Nursery, yeah.
The one in inner southeast?
Right.
And they're contemplating an expansion to outer southeast?
I believe so. I can't answer specific questions about it, but
some proximity to this center might be appropriate.
Sure, and they do regularly make referrals for families into other supportive children's services. Like, this is a point, every parent who checks a child into the childcare receives information about resources in the community, the wider community, that serve vulnerable children. And I think the fact that the teachers are trained and managed by relief nursery staff is really appropriate here, because they understand about working with children who may be impacted by trauma or who have witnessed violence in their home. And they have loving, open hearts and room for a variety of behaviors that these kids might show up with that day. So it really works out well. Having the child care really helped distract my child, made it easier for me to continue with the process. We hear similar sentiments very frequently. So having gotten through these first 5 points, I just want to spend a brief moment on participants' experience in the center, a little bit of the aggregate data that we collect. We ask participants 7 different questions at the end of their visits. And on these are 4 examples. But on all 7, we consistently hear receive responses between 95 and 100% positive. I feel good about this as a director. I watch this information very closely. If I saw any dips, I would be looking at my program to see where we were losing quality. But this has been very consistent. But these are the types of comments that really sustain us doing the work. Again, we hear these not just in writing, but orally as well, that people find hope when they come to the Gateway Center. And I think we're doing very hard work. We're around a lot of trauma every day, and it matters to us to hear these senses of hope and gratitude, and I wanted to share them with you. I hope you feel some pride in what you've done in investing in this program for these citizens that need it. They really need it. So thanks on their behalf. So that's my part of the presentation. I have a very brave survivor here who would like to tell about her experience at the Gateway Center. She's asked that we have not to use her name today. Her words will be interpreted by our program coordinator, Karina Rutova. So thanks again for your time.
Я вышла замуж и приехала в Америку к своему мужу. Я думала, что он хороший, честный человек.
I got married and came to the U.S. to my husband, and I thought he is a good and honest person.
Он был подполковник американской армии. Я думала, что я могу полностью доверять ему себя и моего ребенка.
He was a lieutenant colonel of U.S. Army, and I thought I can trust him with my life and life of my child.
Но вскоре после того, как мы приехали, все изменилось. Он стал издеваться морально, физически надо мной и над моим сыном.
But after we came here, everything changed, and he started to abuse us physically and emotionally, me and my son.
Мы работали на строительстве его дома. Он заставлял поднимать нас тяжелые камни и упрекал тем, что он нас кормит.
We work on construction of his house, and he we were carrying heavy rocks, and he at the same time he was telling us that he is feeding us, and he made us feel bad about it.
Он не делал нам никакие иммиграционные документы, у нас даже не было социальных номеров.
He even didn't get for us any immigration papers, and we didn't have any social security numbers.
А в декабре прошлого года он напился и за ужином стал бить посуду, из которой кушал мой ребенок.
In December of 2010, he got drunk, and during dinner he started to break dishes, from which my son ate.
Он стал угрожать нам пистолетом, бросал нас посуду, даже бросил чайник с кипятком.
He threatened us with a gun, and he threw stuff at us, and even threw at us teapot with boiling water.
Мы убежали. Мы жили в Сэнди, и там было как бы мало очень домов вокруг. Мы убежали через лес к соседям босиком ночью.
We lived at Sandy at that time, and it wasn't too many houses around, so we ran from the house barefoot through the forest to our neighbors.
Мы вызвали полицию. Приехала полиция из Клакамас Каунти.
We called police, and police from Clackamas County came.
Но они стали говорить с моим мужем, как будто они знакомы. Они смеялись, разговаривали, он показывал свою новую машину.
And they started to talk to my husband like they are friends. And they were laughing together. He was showing them their car, or his car.
Они не предоставили нам переводчика, хотя мы не говорили на английском языке, только на 2-3 вопроса в последний момент.
They didn't provide for us an interpreter, even though we didn't speak English at all, and they only gave us interpreter for to answer 2 questions in the end.
И потом, когда я прочитала police report, там не было абсолютно отражено все, что было. Там все было не так.
And when I read police report, it nothing there was what really happened. Everything was like
неправильно.
Not right.
И я стала искать социальные организации, кто может нам помочь, и нашла одну такую организацию, куда обратилась.
And I started to look for social service organization which can help us, and found one which could help. I thought could help us.
Но они отказали, сказали, что у нас нет никаких прав, чтобы мы возвращались к своему мужу, где мы жили.
But they kind of they refused, and they said that we don't have any rights, and it's best for us to go back to our husband. To my husband.
Мы не могли вернуться, потому что нас чуть не убил.
But we could not go back because we almost got killed. And I found myself at Bradley Engel shelter when we moved with my son.
В шелтере мне дали телефон Карины из ГТУ центра, сказали, что именно эта организация, кто сможет нам помочь.
In shelter I got phone number Karina and they said it's an organization which can help us.
Я позвонила, мы встретились в ГТУ центре, рассказала все, что с нами произошло.
I called and we met at the Gateway Center and I told all my story.
И Карина сказала, что ГТУ центр сможет помочь.
And I said, Карина said that. That Gateway Center would be able to help us.
Первое, что мы сделали, это составили план помощи, который необходим мне и моему сыну.
And first, what we did, we created a service plan, which was like necessary for me then.
И потом я стала как бы часто приходить в Gateway Center, и там была очень психологическая атмосфера хорошая.
And I started to come to the Gateway Center. It was Gateway Center has very good psychological atmosphere.
Люди относились с теплотой, заботой ко мне.
And people treated me very warm and caring.
Карина обратилась к Лакомас полицию, мы сделали новый police report, встретились с шерифом.
And Карина contacted Clackamas Police Department and we did new police report.
Потом мы сделали в Gateway Center restraining order. Мой муж продолжал угрожать, мне он звонил, писал на e-mail ужасные письма.
And we obtained at the Gateway Center police restraining order because my husband continued to call me and sent terrible emails threatening me.
Потом, когда мой муж нарушил restraining order,
when my husband violated restraining order, Karina referred me to Divert. And they also helped me a lot.
Потом я встретилась в Gateway Center с district attorney.
I met with district attorney advocate at the Gateway Center.
Мой муж закрыл мой иммиграционный кейс, потому что я ушла от него.
My husband closed my immigration case because I left him.
И Карина в Gateway Center, они все вместе помогли мне собрать кейс для Вава кейса.
And Карина, the Gateway Center staff helped me to gather Вава case for immigration and refer to Catholic Charities.
Также Карина помогла получить письмо от DHS, который тоже в Gateway Center находится.
And also Карина contacted DHS at the Gateway Center, helped me to get a letter.
И с этим письмом я смогла получить социальные номера.
With this letter, I was able to get social security number for me and my son.
И после этого мы смогли получить public benefits.
And we were able to get public benefits, cash, food stamps, and medical insurance.
Также Gateway Center нашел для нас подходящую программу rent assistance. Мы смогли переехать из шелтера в квартиру.
And also the Gateway Center found for us matching programs with rent assistance. We were able to move to an apartment.
Я получила
after shelter.
Консультацию с legal aid адвокатами в Gateway Center. Они предоставили мне бесплатных адвокатов для
моего развода. I received consultation from legal aid at the Gateway Center and they provided for me an attorney for my contested restraining order and divorce without, like, free attorney.
Также в Gateway Center мне подписали на программу конфиденциальный адрес, потому что я очень боюсь моего мужа, чтобы не преследовал меня.
And also the Gateway Center, they signed me for address confidentiality program because I was afraid of my husband to find me.
Также я получила консультацию о Карине об образовании для меня моего ребенка в Америке.
And also Karina provided consultation to me about educational programs for me and for my child in the US.
Теперь я знаю, что могу эвалюировать мой диплом об университетском образовании из России, получить классы какие-то, работать по специальности здесь.
And now I know that I can evaluate my degree from Russia and add some classes and get a new degree which is similar to what I did in Russia.
В Gateway Center я получала еду, когда у меня не было food stamps, билеты на автобус.
At the Gateway Center I was receiving food when I still didn't have food stamps and bus tickets.
И самое главное, это психологическая поддержка для меня, моего ребенка. Мы вместе с ним приходили.
And most important psychological help for me, for my child, we came together.
Я почувствовала, что у меня есть какие-то права, я не бесправна, и у меня есть защита в лице Gateway Center и всех.
And I felt like I have rights and I'm not and I can be protected and Gateway Center was this protection for me.
меня была очень сложная ситуация, но Gateway Center помогал решать все мои проблемы. Я ни разу не услышала от них нет на любой вопрос, на любую просьбу.
I was in very complicated situation, but at the Gateway Center I never heard no. They were answering, like help me to solve all my problems which I had. Everything was, all services were very effective and very important for me.
И очень удобно, что в Gateway центре много представителей других социальных организаций, можно сделать все в одном месте.
And it's very important that at the Gateway Center there are representatives from all different organizations, and you can do everything at one place.
В Gateway центре я познакомилась с Мартой.
And at the Gateway Center, I met Martha, director of the Gateway Center.
Я считаю, что она великолепный руководитель. Это чувствуется даже при входе в Gateway Center.
And I feel like she's very good manager, and she is. You can even feel it when you come into the center.
Что очень хорошо отлажен рабочий процесс и взаимосвязь между сотрудниками.
There is very good operational procedures and how people, how different staff members work with each other.
И от Марты всегда исходило понимание и поддержка к моим проблемам. Я хочу сказать ей очень большое спасибо, Марта.
And Marta always, like I felt support from her too and understanding to my problems. And I want to say thank you very much.
Также я хочу сказать отдельную благодарность Карине Рутовой.
And I want to say thank you to Карина Рутова.
Мой сын называет ее сказочной феей.
My son calls her fairy from fairy tale.
Потому что после встречи с ней наша жизнь очень стала резко меняться в лучшую сторону.
Because after meeting her, our life started to change to better, to much better.
Также я хочу поблагодарить людей, которые создали Gateway Center.
And also I want to say special thank you for people who created this center.
Потому что Gateway Center — это то место, где оказывают реальную действенную помощь.
Because Gateway Center is a center when there is real help.
Они помогают.
Effective.
Помогают вселять надежду в лучшее, и хочется просто жить.
And they help to believe in better and want to live.
Помогают найти святого выхода из всех безысходных
ситуаций. And help to find solutions for any situation which seems like not have solution. It doesn't have solution.
Да, и я никогда не забуду Gateway Center и всех людей, кто помогал мне. Я хочу сказать очень большое всем спасибо.
And I never will forget people from the Gateway Center and everybody who helped me, and I want to say very big thank you.
Если бы я не встретила Gateway Center, я не знаю, что бы было со мной и с моим сыном.
And if I didn't come there, I don't know what would be with me and my son.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're a very courageous woman. Thank you for coming to tell us your story.
Спасибо. Our final invited panel is Chief Deputy District Attorney Rod Underhill and Multnomah County Commissioner Deborah Cafori. Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. And, I'm about ready to enter into the danger zone, going off script, because having listened to what we all listened to, I am inspired to make some comments that are not part of my talking points. You might remember about 2 years ago, we were here seeking support, participation, funding, if you will. And during that conversation, I made a prediction. And the prediction was that if the Gateway Center was built, then we would save the lives. We would save the lives of members of our community. And I made that statement from experience. And I now am comfortable, I think, in making it a claim and not a prediction. You just heard from an individual who, I think, tells us that she believes her life has been saved because of the existence of the Gateway facility. And so is she the only one? And the answer probably is no. We've heard from Martha that thousands of members of our community have gone to the Gateway Center in just 1 year. So do we have just one person whose life has been saved or certainly made substantially better? No, we have hundreds and probably thousands. So thank you for that. Thank you for that. Now to the talking points. Because of the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence, the District Attorney's Office has been able to place resources out at that facility. The resources come in the form of a prosecutor and a domestic violence crime victims advocate. Initially, the funding for the prosecutor was grant funding. The grant funding has ran out, and because we have seen the extreme value of having a prosecutor physically located at the Gateway Center, in conversations with our district attorney, Mr. Schrunk, he agreed with me that we needed to continue to have that physical presence. That person needed to remain involved with and tied in with the Gateway Center. The reasons are, we know in the district attorney's office that the best practice is going to be hands-on at the front end of a case. And by physical location and proximity to this central hub where the victims are coming to, we know that at the front end, when we intersect with them and work with them as a coordinated team effort, we are going to gather more evidence, we are going to gather more trust, we're going to gather more support, and as a result, we're going to have a better case for prosecution and be able to reach the remedy, the safe remedy for a family relative to those efforts. The involvement at that front end is a critical stage. We know this from examples such as the neighborhood prosecutor unit, the neighborhood DA unit is what we call it. We know that people out in the community, when they are out and able to be there at the front lines, are going to give us the best product. We also know that that is resource and logistically sometimes challenging, so we're not able to do it all the time. We do it in the neighborhood prosecutor's unit, we do it here, and that should give you an indication of how serious the district attorney's office treats this kind of violence and is interested in continuing the participation. Last Thursday, I was asked by the YWCA, Yolanda House, to make some comments at the lighting of the Morrison Bridge, where we now see that we have purple lights signifying Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And it was at that event that I made a few different comments, but one of them was that we in positions of leadership, we in positions of city and county leadership, need to continue to lend a loud voice to ending domestic violence. The efforts here, the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence, is one of the loudest voices we could have done in the last year, certainly. It's one of the most significant things that we've managed to do. I want us to continue to redouble those efforts, continue to have enthusiasm for the program because it is doing tremendous work. Martha's doing tremendous work, and she's often having visitors from outside of our community come in for tours. We're having the Chief Justice was here a couple months ago as he had heard about the program, and we guided him around and showed him around the tremendous work. State officials, elected officials from the representatives, for example, Lou Fredericks and others, have had the opportunity to hear about our program and come and seen the great work that's being done. So let's keep it up. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Deborah Cafori, Multnomah County Commissioner. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today. At the one-year anniversary of the Gateway Center, we have a really unique opportunity to examine how we provide services to domestic violence survivors and their children in our community. And it's no surprise, unveil the door. But, you know, last year before the center opened, there were a lot of questions and concerns within the domestic violence community about how this new center was going to operate. I think there was some concern that we would just be adding another door to an already stressed and maxed out system. But in fact, I think the Gateway Center has given a new entry point to services for women and children who maybe wouldn't have come through those traditional doors. And as we've seen from Martha's data, we have had a whole new group of survivors and their families who have come forward and gotten help that might not otherwise have gotten the help that they needed. The variety of participants seeking services at Gateway reminds us that domestic violence impacts people from all walks of life and every socioeconomic stratum. And as we come together today to share the success of the Gateway Center, I think you read my talking points, too, because I think it's really incumbent of all of us in leadership positions to look at the results that we've seen today, to think critically about the services that we have for survivors in our communities, to admit that we can do better, and to advocate for more. The county recently concluded a special report on domestic violence and, quote, "The existing system is structured and funded for crisis and post-crisis response, not outreach and prevention." And that means that we wait for women who are to be in crisis before we give them the help that they need. We wait until they're in danger of losing their lives, until they're able to access services. And in nearly every case, when a woman calls a shelter for assistance, she is told that there is no room at the inn. I believe, and I think we all do, that domestic violence services should be available to everybody who needs them. And we can and should do more to help these families before they reach the crisis point. I want to thank Martha and her amazing staff at the Gateway Center for the work that you do in impacting people's lives every day. And I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman and all of you on the City Council for funding these really critical services in our community and partnering with the county. I think we talked earlier about, you know, the traditional county city services, and I think this is just another way, another example of how when we work together, we can do amazing things. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't know if we had anybody signed up to testify?
Or? No one else signed up.
Okay. I'd just like to close by, first of all, saying I don't think we mentioned where the center is. It's at 102nd and East Burnside, and it's open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. And as I said, you don't need an appointment. You can just show up. So I'd like to thank all of our partners at the Gateway Center, especially our Multnomah County partners, represented by Chair Kogan and Commissioner Kafori, as well as the District Attorney's Office, in particular Mike Schrunk and Rod Underhill, who made a significant staffing commitment to the center very early on. I also want to thank Sheriff Dan Staten, who also made a commitment to provide a facility security officer who provides the security at the Gateway Center. And then I'd like to acknowledge, as everybody has, Martha Strawn Morris, who's doing a great job, her staff, Karina Rutova and Diana Lee, and all the service providers at the Gateway Center for the intense hard work they do day after day to make it easier for victims of domestic violence to become survivors. So thank you all. That concludes our presentation.
I do have a question.
All right.
If there's questions on the budget request, now's the time.
It is. I obviously support Resolution 42, Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and the report on the Gateway Center. I was pleased to support Commissioner Saltzman's initial proposal that forged this partnership with the county some time back, and intend to continue doing so. I appreciate the work and the testimony of everybody involved. So I apologize in advance for the questions I'm going to ask. But this week we've all been briefed by the mayor that public safety bureaus, which are the police bureau, the fire bureau, and the Bureau of Emergency Communications, will have to prepare a budget for next year that would require a 4% cut, which amounts to over 3 fire stations closing and a rescue. I don't know how much that means in reduction of service at BOEC or police, but it's significant. And all other general fund bureaus will have to prepare up to an 8% cut, including parks. So I'm fully intending to vote for the $41,000 allocation, but I do think in the context of acknowledging that next year we're going to see serious reductions in all services, I have a couple questions about $41,000. It's not a lot of money, but I think it's important for us at this point to begin asking these kinds of questions for budgeted amounts that are outside our normal process that we go through. So what process did you go through to identify the $41,000?
Well, I don't know if Andy Neal or the county domestic violence coordinator and Captain Henderson from Portland Police want to just come up. But
I'm not so much talking about specifically the process for the positions or the wisdom of the positions. That I don't need an explanation to. I actually mean the fiscal process that internally here in the city. I would remind you that in proposals like this in the past, you have voted no because they came to us outside of the budget process. I'm not going to vote no, but you've raised the same kind of a concern, I think now more than ever, given the cuts that we are inevitably going to see in all the services.